Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey guys, this is part two of a recent Talking Metal Live episode that featured Anthony Esposito and Michael Angelo. We heard from Anthony in the first part of the interview, and now we are going to hear from Michael Angelo. Michael Angelo Badio. He's got a brand new record out. It's great, and he's going to tell us all about it, and we're going to get into it right now here on Talking Metal. And for the video portion of this, you'll get to see a little Michael Angelo Badio house tour, if you will, checking out his guitars. Of course, it probably won't play out quite as well in the audio podcast version of this, but it was cool. So if you're listening to this, I suggest you head over to the YouTube page and check out the video for it. And also subscribe while you're there to our YouTube page, youtube.com/talkingmetal. All right, here we go. A little Michael Angelo Badio. This interview, again, comes from a recent edition of Talking Metal Live.
Mark Striegel, John Astronomy, the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. Here's your hosts, Mark and John.
Ladies and gentlemen, a guy that I've been a fan of for many, many years, a good friend of ours, Michael Angelo Badio. Can you hear us, Michael?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good. This is my co-host, John. He's hanging out in his apartment. I'm here in my basement. We're in New Jersey. Michael is in, I believe you're in Chicago, right? Is that?
I'm like in the northern burbs, and I'm in my studio right now, which is in the basement of my house, too. So
awesome. Well, that's my hometown, Chicago. Hinsdale is where I went to high school and stuff, and used to go see you at the Thirsty Whale and the all-age shows, and it was such a big part of my teenage years, and we'll talk all about that. But first, I got to tell you, this new record that was sent over to me, More Machine Than Man, once again, you're killing it, man. It's so, so good, and I have notes on the different songs that I like. And let's just start off. An instrumental record. When did you record this?
Well, we started it. It was supposed to be a Nitro record. And what happened was we got Chris Adler from Lamb of God and Megadeth.
Right, you know, I remember that.
And then he goes, wouldn't it be cool if we got Victor Wooten on bass? So I called Victor. And Victor's a fan of mine. And, you know, here's the guy's 5-time Grammy award-winning bassist. But what happened during this is Chris got a really bad shoulder injury. He got into a terrible motorcycle accident. All these things transpired, so it delayed the record. So a lot of the material I wrote in 2017 and 2018, and the record was finished last year, but we couldn't release it around Christmas. We were going to release it in the beginning of this year. And then all of a sudden this COVID stuff happened. So it got delayed till now, but it's all new material and all songs that I wrote. And then a couple of the songs were produced and arranged by Josh Wilbur, who got the Grammy for Megadeth's last album. And he also engineered Chris's drums too. So I was really happy.
So it's Chris Adler on the drums, and on the bass, Victor is on the bass too?
Only on one song, though.
Okay.
And Chris didn't play everything because he got hurt before.
Right.
So what I did was I'm a good drummer. I'm not a great drummer, but I'm good. There's so much cool drum software out there. And Chris actually did a whole program of his MIDI drumming. It's really Chris, but they converted it to MIDI files. So what you don't hear Chris physically live playing, I'm using MIDI files that Chris would use. So it's really cool.
Michael, that is amazing. Now, are you engineering as well as playing?
Well, I'm a good tracking engineer. You know, I took courses on it, but I can't mix at all. And the only thing I can track is I'm good at tracking guitars, bass, and keys. If I need an acoustic guitar, you know, I never mix my own albums or master. I stay in my lane. And you know, like a lot of people, we all have home studios, but you need the bad boys to mix it. I'm sorry. Or to track. There's no way I can track drums. I mean, I might know how. That doesn't mean I'm good at it, you know. So I know my limitations. But, you know, I'm a writer and I can record my guitars. But even when I record guitars, I have an engineer that I've worked with come in and mic up the amps. You know, I like to use real amps. So, and then I sometimes back them up with direct sounds that you can reamp later. So, my phone's going crazier, but yeah, that's a good question.
And I wanted to ask you about some of the individual songs, because like I said, I've really been enjoying the record. Again, more machine than man. Now, first, let's start, it's obviously a song on the record, but it's also the title of the record. And it's funny because, you know, I've seen reviews like of you when they're like, well, he plays so fast, it's like a machine. But then on the flip side of that, for me personally, I love your speed and I'm blown away by it, but you have this crazy ability that a lot of guys don't have to mix the emotion with it, which a machine wouldn't have. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because even in the Holland days, I played fast and we had Tom Worman producing our record. He did Poison and Motley Crue and he liked the way I played fast. He goes, it made sense to me. That's what he told me. Right. The first two songs on Little Monsters are two of my fastest solos because he liked the way I added speed and quickness to the melody. So, coming from Chicago and listening to Holland, that's how I was brought up listening to music. When I lived in LA, it was almost like you know, I remember the owner of BC Rich Guitars at the time, Bernie Rico, he said, you guys are a bunch of gunslingers. Everybody trying to outgun the other, but it was kind of like that back then with Yngwie Malmsteen and Paul Gilbert and
right.
Everybody's just taking it to the nth degree. So yeah. I was right.
Yeah. And absolutely. I just want to go through some of my favorite tunes on the records, on the record again, More Machine Than Man by Michelangelo Badio. And let me start with an interesting one. Cause I'm this crazy heavy metal guy, but Dreamin' of 1986, a beautiful, softer song that is kind of in the middle there. And it was this nice little bridge in between a lot of real heavy music. Great. What is that about? Is there some symbolism behind that title and music?
Yeah. Well, you know, after I was in the band Holland, you know, we were all based in LA, even though we were all from Chicago. And when I left Holland, I moved back to California. And I used to live in Woodland Hills, and it's not too far from Topanga Canyon. And I used to go up in the foothills with an acoustic guitar and a cassette deck. And I would just play and write. And I just write all this stuff. I mean, it's kind of like even when we did Gotta Run in Holland, Tommy had the verse and the pre-chorus. I came up with the chorus and that really cool, mellow intro. I'm always writing songs. So I was working on this album, and it was about 3 or 4 in the morning. And I plugged in the acoustic guitar. I just started saying, I'm just tired of playing metal tonight. And I started, and I turned down the DAW system, you know, the digital audio, you know, my software. And I just recorded these parts that I had already written. And I just put them together. It was just a one take version that I'd never played before. And wow. I listened back and I'm like, that's pretty cool. And I played it for a couple other people. I said, what do you guys think about this? Everybody thought it sounded great. So that's how it happened. But it reminded me of sitting in the foothills in Topanga Canyon playing acoustic guitar. And it was
Right on. And just to mention a couple other songs, The Badlands, again, super heavy. Like, what are you tuned down to on that? Is that like C or C sharp?
I use 7-string guitars.
Right. Not all, oh, okay.
I really like them. And so I took the 7th string, which is normally a B, and I moved it down a whole step to A. So it's like...
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, and that song I love. And there's a little bits of jazziness even in that song, which is a heavier song. 21st Century Beck, you know, is that, are you talking about Jeff Beck? Is that a nod to him? Because I got to tell you, at times on this record, even though it's a hard rock driving record, I mean, there are elements of that, you know, a Blow by Blow or a Wired, you know, you do have some jazzy moments kind of filtered in here and there, which I love.
Oh, thanks. You know, where I got that title was when we were mixing the album, the engineer that was mixing it, he goes, dude, he goes, you kind of sound like Jeff Beck on some of this stuff. And he said, he goes, listen to these riffs. And, you know, because it's really bluesy, but you're right, because Blow by Blow and Wired had a lot of mixed meters. They had, you know, Jan Hammer, fusion players. And so I mix all these crazy mixed meters underneath, like, I remember playing this song for Adler, for Chris, and he's like, what the hell is that? And he wanted me to straighten it out. And I did straighten out the version for him, and I didn't like it as much, but because my idea was to have this wild underlying mixed meters and crazy stuff, but kind of bluesy over the top in spots. But that's how I got the title.
And I know John probably has some questions, but one more about the songs. Charlie Went to Chicago. Of course, there's that little nod in that song to The Devil Went Down to Georgia, which is just amazing to hear you rip that solo on a guitar as opposed to, what, a violin or a viola? I'm not sure what it was played on.
Yeah, violin, yeah. And again, that was a Chris Adler idea. He goes, you know, he lives in Virginia, and he told me, he's like, he goes, it'd be cool. We should do like The Devil Went Down to Georgia. And I said, are you serious? And he goes, yeah. So I did a complete demo of it, full blown. And he thought it was awesome. And then what I did, I had a really long, one of the things I did on this new record, the two longest songs are the ones Josh Wilbur, the producer, arranged. I tried to keep the songs a lot shorter. You know, they're not 9-minute epics. And you know, even like, again, even the old Holland days, 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes. We did what we had to do and get out. That's what I did. But I'm glad you like it. And the reference to Charlie Went to Chicago, you know, the home.
Yeah, right on. And you know, that's the golden rule of show business right there. Leave them wanting more, which this record definitely does. And I'll let John get a couple words in here before I start talking about Holland.
Michael, as you can tell, I'm a gear fanatic and I'm a guitar fanatic. So obviously I love you. I loved what you've done forever. I am in a totally different league as a player than you are. So you're up here and I'm not quite there, but I want to talk to you about your gear and I see two amazing stacks right behind you. And I know you've played with Dean guitars, Gibson guitars, other guitars. Tell me about the new company or the company you're currently with who is doing your current guitars. And I see you got the shirt on and these amazing looking stacks that you got behind you.
Well, thanks. You know, one of the things that, I've learned over the years is you have to know who you are, you know, whether it's a business, whether you're a McDonald's, Steve Vai, you get an image of Steve Vai, like me, people picture, you know, I have a silhouette logo of my double. When it comes to the amps, I didn't have an amp endorsement for many years because I did a lot of work with Dean Guitars. The owner of Dean passed away about 3 years ago. And it's just not the same company. They're not run by musicians anymore. They're losing endorsees. Or, you know, we just the other day, we had ex-Dean employees contacting us for jobs. I mean, it's not the same. I couldn't wear the Dean shirt. It's like being in a gang and it's over. You can't wear the colors anymore. But the amps behind me, it's from a company called Sawtooth, which the name is not that well known. But they're a part of three companies. They have Chromacast, which is it's like accessory company. Some of the top 10 most bought products in musical instruments are from Chromacast. They are they're a really big conglomerate. They have a music store, a brick and mortar store. So there's three companies in one. They are just doing booming business. And they have three people that are their main endorsees: me on guitar, Rudy Sarzo on bass, and Vinny Appice on drums. And wow. I mean, these are serious crows. That there's four main owners. I just love work. They're like brothers, you know. It's like when you get in a room and, you know, you love the way they think and in business, but the stacks behind me are two amps. And I found that from using all this digital equipment over the years, and for a short while of time, I used a company out of Italy that made amp processing. And I started thinking to myself, well, what guitarist do I know and like? Well, I like Mark Tremonti. Does he use processed stuff? No, he uses amps. What about Joe Bonamassa? Well, he uses real amps. So I thought to myself, now that I'm not working with Dean in anywhere near that capacity, it's been over for a while. I'm basically touring now when I play live. So I just love use. They're all tube heads. I have my own signature amp coming out, but with this COVID thing, it got delayed. But we're going to have a vintage 30 in there and, you know, just nice beefy tubes. And that's what I like.
They look great. Now, let me ask you about the two cabinets, because I see one's a little taller. Like what, do some have vintage 30s in it? Is the middle one a 410, or what are those? But
no, these actually, I'm about a little over 6 feet tall. If I stood next to them, they're like 3/4 size stacks. So
they look like where you're sitting down. I thought they were full size stacks.
Yeah, it's kind of an illusion. We were actually filming some stuff today. That's why when Mark contacted, you know, it worked out perfect. I'm kind of on the set a little bit. There's two vertical 12s on the bottom and a 112 on the top. There's only three 12s total.
Oh, cool. That's great. Now, you like vintage 30s? Is that what the Celestians?
Yeah. Yeah, I like them. I like vintage 30s and greenbacks, you know, but they sound really good. And I've already done, before this COVID hit, I did more shows in the first 2 months than I've done any time in years. I mean, probably about 40 shows. But I'm with the person, the video guy, Austin. He toured, we toured together, and we did a string of like 21 shows, 28 shows total right before COVID hit. And then I was at NAMM and in LA doing so. And these, we used them all the time and no problems. They were really good.
May I ask I don't know if you have one handy, but can you show us a guitar on camera, one of the new guitars?
Yeah, I can. I've got it plugged in something else right here. Okay, with Dean, I did a lot of graphics and things, but they had pointy guitars, but we actually got away from that. It's more like a Super Strat, but here's the thing about Sawtooth. They have a huge base, online base. I mean, the amount of guitars they sell is unbelievable. But see, what they do is something different. This is called the M24, and it's not this radical-looking guitar, but these are the first two that we could get out by NAMM. And I have another one, a black one, but here's the difference. For around $450, you can get a top-of-the-line German-made Floyd Rose on this guitar. And then, so it is a really good guitar, and they use a different wood. Rosewood, as you know, it's kind of an endangered wood now. Yeah. There's another wood, I can't remember the name, that acts like rosewood. The moisture content, it's almost the same, but it's really plentiful. And so, alder body, standard stuff, but it's a flat white finish. But the thing that I love, we have a whole bunch of signature guitars coming out on the line, 7 strings. We just have to wait, but they can do things with price points where, it's one thing to make an expensive guitar. It's one thing. And then if you make an inexpensive one, people think, God, it's cheap. They make really great products for a really good price. We're trying to bring into playing music. Look at your beautiful collection behind you. A lot of people, a beginner's not going to be able to afford those bad boys. You know what I mean? And so we're going to bring the price points of the line. But I have one signature guitar here, this one. It's got a maple neck. It's $200+ price range. And then they have upgrade kits where you can get Seymour's, all the top quality parts, top quality electronics. But they really are a great company. And I mean, for Vinny Appice to leave a Dean company, their drum company, to come to Sawtooth, he could be with anybody too. So is Rudy Sarzo, but they're bros, they're brothers, they're great people. And we've just started with my signature line. Well, let me put these down.
Comes out. That maple neck with the black block inlays is beautiful, let me tell you. I get into that so much. One thing that I would love to you to talk about, and I want to explain to some of our viewers and listeners who are new and who don't understand, but you can play guitar with both hands at the same time, right-handed, what some people would consider right-handed and left-handed. You've had as many as four necks, and you've invented something. I believe you invented it, the string dance. Yes.
And I right here. We Chromacast, one of the Sawtooth companies, manufactures these, and they're under $20. But what I needed was, when I'm playing two guitars at the same time, there's no extra hand to stop the strings. And, you know, people can make jokes, well, you can use other body parts, you know, but you know, it's like, what can you do? So I did some research, and there was a American guitarist, but of Dutch descent, named George Van Epps. In the 1950s, they came up with a very crude style damper, he called it. And it was to do what it's to block noise, so you sounded cleaner. So I re-engineered it. I got a patent on it, and that's what I put on the guitars. But people like Jennifer Batten use them. There's a lot of young up-and-coming musicians that use these because it's great for tapping, and that's what we do. And they work great for the double, because once I clamp this down, like if you can hear, it deadens it. And so then I play two guitars, and this is the proverbial third hand. So it enables me to hammer and pull off till you know, I feel like stopping. But then I can just touch the guitar, you know, it really, because only what I touch plays, unless I really make a bad mistake, which hopefully that doesn't happen. But this blocks out all the extra extraneous strings.
I'm definitely going to order those, and I'm going to practice with it. I think it's so cool, and it's one of the things I couldn't wait to talk to you about.
Thanks. Yeah, you don't have to drill into your guitar, nothing. You know, it doesn't.
Amazing. So you don't even have to put a screw in there. You can add that to the guitar under the strings on the headstock, and there's no drilling involved.
No, because I was really adamant about that, because my original versions did. And I'm like, well, why would somebody want to ruin their guitar by drilling two holes, you know, right in the headstock? So they're thumb screws. It just slides under, a part slides underneath like that, almost like the metal sign. Just goes, and you just put the thumb screws in it, done. You know, and there's a pad there, so it will leave your guitar untouched. So
it's awesome. That is really awesome, Michael. Thank you.
So Michael, I've every time I interview you, which has been a bunch of times at this point, I always have to revisit my youth through you. Holland, a band that I just loved. And I mean, we would go as a kid, I mean, I was 14, 15, I would go see the all-age shows at the Thirsty Whale. I was at maybe not every one of them, but almost every one of them that you guys did. And those were such big moments for me, because you guys were rock stars in Chicago. I mean, that Holland record, which I believe was signed to, you guys were signed to Atlantic, is that correct? I mean, Atlantic. Little Monsters was one of the biggest rock records in the Chicagoland area. And this is pre-internet, so things were much more localized in those days. But I remember talking with some of the local record stores, and they were like, yeah, man, I mean, the Little Monsters was selling as much as, you know, what was it, Done With Mirrors by Aerosmith. You guys were really a big, big deal to the local crowd in Chicago, sold out the clubs consistently. And do you ever hear from Tommy Holland or Brad or Joey? What happened to those guys?
Well, we did a reunion a few years ago, because Brad, the drummer, he was actually the youngest member of the band. He had, unfortunately, throat cancer, but he survived. You know, he's doing good. Okay. But we did a benefit to raise money. But I still, you know, we're all brothers. We, you know, we don't talk every day, but it's kind of like a family member that you don't see all the time, but you're still family. And Tommy's doesn't have a huge online presence, but his wife, Tammy, you know, he'll say, yeah, Tommy said hello. And, And, you know, and we don't live that far away. He's up in Wisconsin. But, yeah, you know, the thing, Mark, and I think we've touched on this before, most bands that get signed to major labels, I mean, we had Tom Warman, engineer, you know, producing, Dwayne Barron, who did Quiet Riot's Bang Your Head. He was the engineer. I mean, we had rock and roll royalty producing us. But what happened is most bands, they can't live up to the hype. They can't deliver the record. They have great management, great label. They can't. It's kind of like a movie. You can have Robert Downey Jr., but if the movie sucks, it's not going to do good. Here we did the opposite. We had a great album. It was selling like crazy. When you said Aerosmith Done with Mares, we actually did stadium shows with them, like did the Alpine Valley. We toured with them during that time. But what we didn't have is the management connection to the record company to put it over the top. They just, you know, I've never had this happen where the band delivered the music. We had the music. We still have the music, but the actual business people in charge of really getting that stuff out, the music out, yeah, didn't do their job. It was the exact opposite of usually what happens.
It's, yeah, weird. And it's funny because, you know, again, in the Chicago area, it caught on, and there were guys, I don't remember, do you remember Scott Loftus on RPM? I mean, he played the hell out of that record. I think that's, you know, one of the ways I may have discovered you guys. But I remember Joe Perry being interviewed by Scott Loftus, and of course they took phone calls, and somebody called up and was like, hey, Joe Perry, what do you think of Holland? You know, because we were such rabid fans. And I remember Joe Perry saying, yeah, they got great songs, a great guitar player, great singer. They're, you know. So somebody dropped the ball on that, because what we knew in Chicago was that Holland was just gold. And I feel like it was our own little secret, unfortunately, you know.
Well, you know, I've tried over the years to keep the music alive. I put the solo to the song High Life in my song No Boundaries, and it's one of my, yes, most well-known, you know, it's played all over the world with guitar players. So I'm so proud of that record. And I just remember, even today, you know, I hear something about Holland almost every day of my life, because it's one of these albums that the music has stood the test of time, and it's kind of remembered on its own inertia. You know, because it wasn't, the record company didn't, we just didn't have that business side. See, conversely, when I was in the band Nitro, the singer and I hated the sound of our record, but the machine was in place. We hit the charts. We had a lot of tour support. We had MTV play.
Headbangers Ball was playing it. Yep.
Yeah. You know, it was the opposite. We didn't feel we had the music the way it should have been. We hated it, but the label loved it and pushed the heck out of it.
Right.
It was like, I've had the both extremes. And so, but yeah, this Holland thing, it's really close to me, because it's like you said, we were so popular around here. And I mean, even on restaurants, like they had that Bratstop, that really famous restaurant in Kenosha. Yeah. You know, they said National X that played here. Holland was on the menu. And, you know, it's just it's fun. But even now, you know, people ask me, especially a lot of younger people that are into 80s music, I get, dude, that song Gotta Run, or they like, you know, Wake Up the Neighborhood. And the big three that I hear all the time, Gotta Run, Basics of the Bullet, and Wake Up the Neighborhood. Those are the three that seem to be the most popular.
I got to put High Life in there too, because that was a great one too. I mean, that's the thing with Little Monsters is, and guys, if to our listeners out there, I'll play some of the music on the podcast, which I have in the past, but it is a perfect record through and through. The songwriting is just fantastic. The musicianship, great. And yeah, great, great stuff. And thank you for giving us so much good music through the years, Michael. And I want John, I'll let John throw over to John for another one, get a few more questions in here.
I go back to my music gear. I'm a music student. Mark, well, actually, Mark and I met at Berklee College of Music. So I actually went for drums, despite the fact that I got all these guitars. And believe it or not, I started out on keyboards. So this is, I just like all gear. But anyway.
Yeah, you're very well-educated and rounded musician. That's great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now, one of the things I think is a cool story, and I'm going to tie Mark into this too. You did an instructional video called Star Licks. And Mark, you have that, right? Absolutely. Yeah, and the coolest thing about, well, the video is a great video, but there's a great story that Dimebag Darrell, the legendary late amazing guitarist, was a real big fan of yours. And I wondered if you can, oh, Mark, show the picture again with the guitar like this. Yeah, I want our viewers and listeners to see that you play with two necks, because some people just don't understand that.
not a double neck, a double guitar, right, Michael?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Jimmy Page uses double necks.
Right.
That's
right. Playing like this with your guitar connected in the middle, and you even have one that has four necks. And
that's
so
right.
It's just unbelievable. Let me just set these down.
What a collection.
Yeah, he's got some beautiful Les Pauls.
So I wondered if you could tell the story about you and Dimebag and your interactions with him and how he was a big fan of yours.
Sure. I was in the band Nitro, and we were doing our second record. Now, at the time, our first album was extremely successful. The label loved us. They quadrupled our record budget for the second one. But they said, and we were hanging out with probably not the best people, like CeCe DeVille and Steven Adler when he was in Guns N' Roses. Me and the Jim were the band. And we were hanging out with all the rock and roll elite. And, you know, we're not druggies. Neither one of us do drugs. But the label just thought it was too toxic of an environment for us to do our second record, even though we did the first one in L.A. So they sent us to Florida to a place called Full Sail Center of the Recording Arts. It's in Rainier Park. Go there. And we said, we don't want to go to Orlando's Mickey Mouse. We don't want to, Mickey isn't metal. You know, and they were laughing. They go, you guys are going. So the singer and I, we rented this killer house. We flew out, our road crew had to drive 3,000 miles across country. But my guitar tech at the time was named Dragon. He was from Fresno. And back then, you know, everybody was like, dude, full on ecstasy, bad, bro. Like we all talk like that, bro, dude. And so he gives me a cassette and he goes, bro, you got to hear this new band. I go, what are they called? He goes, they're called Pantera, dude. I go, what the heck is a Pantera? Puts the cassette in. I hear Cowboys from Hell. I hear, I'm like, oh my God. And then he goes, they're playing in Orlando in a couple of weeks. So we bring the entire band, the posse, our roadies, everybody was living in the house. We drive into this club called Plus Three. And we knew the really, you know, hot female bartenders there. And we knew everybody there because, you know, we had already lived in Orlando and we're recording for about a month. Nobody's in the parking lot. We go in. We're literally the only people there for this brand new band called Pantera that's supporting this brand new record called Cowboys from Hell. And so I'm sitting at the bar. Pantera gets up on stage. I see this guy in these shorts, long shorts, you know, and he's got like that weird pink beard and he's riffing. And I'm like, oh my God, listen to him. He sounds as good or better than the album. So I walk up to the front. Now picture stage left, audience right. That's where Dime was. I'm about 10 feet away from the stage. And the music stops. I'm the only guy there. There's only a couple people in the audience. And he literally goes like this. He looks like this to dim the lights for, and he goes, is that Michelangelo? I'm like, yeah, bro. He goes, I got your instructional video, dude. He goes, you're like my guitar teacher, bro. I'm like, awesome. And then he goes, Pantera's dedicating a set of tonight's music to Michelangelo. And then we got off stage and we became friends. But he told me how much it influenced him. When you hear some of the licks on my instructional video, people have pointed out that they're reminiscent of riffs he played later. And he was supposed to play on one of my solo albums. The next tour stop was Chicago before he got shot. And we were ready in the studio for him. It was really sad. But, you know, I won't say it was my best friend, but we were good friends. We knew each other pretty well.
And you've paid tribute to him on album with some beautiful, actually playing some of his music, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Not on the new record, but previously.
Yeah, I did two cover albums. And because, you know, the new record's all my music, but one of them was called Tribute to Dime. And I had a sound-alike singer that sounded like Phil on there, and he did a really credible job. And, you know, I just tried to, you know, I've said this, I can't play Dime better than Dime could play Dime. Just like I can't be a better Randy Rhoads than Randy Rhoads. So I don't try. I try to do my best interpretation of their music to pay tribute. So that's in my mind, you know, because sometimes people say, well, dude, it doesn't sound like Dime. Well, it's not supposed to. I'm not Dime. I want to play his music to give a tribute to him in my own way. But it's done really well. You know, people like it.
I love that. And Michael, you don't have to go run and get this because I know it's way back there, but I see a blue burst, what looks like a Dime style Dean in the back there. Is that what that is?
Yeah, this is, you know, I have a pretty good sized guitar collection. I could actually walk upstairs and show you guys. Gonna see some wild stuff.
See it if you could do it.
Okay, let's do it. Hang on a second.
This is amazing.
I have the only Gibson double guitar ever built. I have a Gibson.
All that. I showed a picture in the show open that was you with a double guitar, and I saw the Gibson logo on that, which yes. I was gonna ask about.
I'm walking upstairs, so this is like real time, real life here.
I love it.
Little Angelo Badio Cribs going on here, yeah.
It's like MTV Cribs.
Okay, I've got this on the left. Everything, it's getting dark out here. Okay, hang on.
I see lots of guitars. Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I don't know if you could.
That's incredible.
Wow. There's about 90 in here.
Right. I see it against the window. Is that it?
Yeah. Can you see more lights?
Yeah, okay. I see one of them there. It's kind of a charcoal color.
Oh yeah. Are you talking about the Dean guitar here?
Oh no. That's great, but I'm talking about the double guitar in the back, kind of in front of the window.
Okay, yeah. Here. I don't know if you can. Can you see that double?
Yeah.
That's my last Dean one before Elliot died. This one here, I wish I could turn. This is the only Gibson double guitar ever made. I'm going to put my phone towards the guitar so you can see.
Yeah, I love that. Wow.
The headstock says Gibson. It was. It looks like two Explorers. I wish I could tilt the camera the other way. But
we can see it. We can see it. Great. It looks amazing. And I saw the Gibson logo on the headstock in the picture that I posted.
Yes. Yeah. See, and you know, the four neck quad guitar that I had in Nitro, that was a Gibson, and it was built by Wayne Charvel. So it's a Charvel Gibson, but guitars. I don't have nearly, your collection is completely different than mine. I don't have a Les Paul in it. And, you know, but I've got some old Fenders. It's not that I don't want one. I don't like Gibsons. I love Gibsons. But I have a lot of old Deans and you know, I have prototypes and things that I've gotten, like crazy guitars, like Washburn 29 fret guitars. And
29 frets. That's amazing. That's really amazing.
Yeah. But I love them, you know, like you love them. It's great.
I love them. And you know what I think is cool? You got, I don't know if that's a Gibson or an Epiphone, but that backwards V, that's really cool.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's a store in the Chicago area called the Music Gallery. They've been around since the 70s. They're a diamond dealer, which means they're in a very affluent area, Highland Park, Chicago. It's like Beverly Hills. So, you know, when Michael Jordan lived here and Oprah, all that area, you know, the CEO of United Airlines, I used to teach guitar there. And I taught Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine when I was going to school. But he collects the Music Gallery, gets certain guitars in, and I got a call from the owner. That's a Gibson reverse flying V. And he called me up. The owner's name, Frank Leona. And Frank calls me up. He goes, Mike, Rick Nielsen just bought two of these. He goes, you know, he gives me everything for cost. He goes, buy it and put it under your bed. And so I bought it. I've never really plugged it in. It's so bizarre.
Cool. That's a Gibson. It looks like it's Carina. If it's not Carina, it's a natural. I bet that's going to be worth a lot if it isn't already worth a lot right now.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It's Carina. And I even have the price tag on it. And back then it listed for $1,429. It's about like about 10 or 15 years old. I can't remember. I have to look. I have it dated. But and it's in pristine condition. I mean, you know,
that guitar room is unbelievable. Is that a Washburn? It's like A20V back there. The Yeah, that is amazing.
Right. You know your guitars. And I even have a Washburn that Nuno gave me. It's called the P3. He called it the Princess because I guess his daughter's name is Princess, you know, his nickname for. But I got that from him too.
Yeah. So guys, Washburn, correct me if I'm wrong, but so Dean was a Chicago-based company and Washburn was too, correct?
Yeah. Washburn was in they're still in Mundelein. They used to be in Buffalo Grove, then they moved to Mundelein. But, you know, I'm not a big company hopper. What happened with Washburn was the owner, Rudy Schlocker, was getting ready to sell the company. He was very wealthy. He was from Austria originally. Do you remember those strings called Nashville Straits? Do you remember that where they were marketing strings without being wound? They were just straight up. They were like 3 feet tall in these little skinny boxes.
Right. But it sounds familiar. Yeah.
Well, this was Rudy, the guy that bought Washburn. He came up with this idea to market strings without putting them in a circle, just straight up. So these little skinny boxes. And he made millions on it. But he bought Washburn and, you know, he's very wealthy. He's Austrian. He bought this beautiful chalet in Austria. So he was selling the company. So that's when, as luck would have it, I started talking to Elliot, the owner that passed away from Dean. And he's like, Mike, it's time to come home. And so I ended up, you know, I knew Washburn was being sold. You know, we left on really good terms. You know, he understood. He was selling the company. So I went back to Dean. It was like the perfect confluence of events. It just all happened. You know, one company was leaving, another company is on the rise. And then, you know, 1 year later, that's when Dime got back. And then, you know, Dean exploded, you know, but it was a really fun time. But, you know, the owner's gone of Dean. So it's not the same company. Just like Washburn, it's not the same without, it's going to change. It's just, it's, you know, it's better or worse, I don't know, but I don't hear much of Washburn anymore. But I still love the guitars. They're cool.
I love all of them. And I got a nice Washburn too. You know what? Well, you let Mark ask a question. I'm going to show you one really cool Washburn, and then I'll stop talking about my guitars.
Oh, I love guitars.
I'll leave it at this
for hours talking about this.
For one of my last questions for you, Mike, you've had such an incredible career. When you look back at it, what are like one or two of your highlights, career highlights?
Well, I think, you know, being signed with Holland, and not just because you and I are friends and we know the band. You know, I mean, when we played Alpine Valley, opening up for Aerosmith, and Joe Perry calls me into his dressing room and says, are you going to do it? I went, what? He goes, are you going to do the double? And when I played the double guitar at Alpine Valley, because we only had 35 minutes, no encore, 35 on and off. That was it. That was our allotted time. And they actually literally called me into their dressing room to make sure I was going to play it because I never played. I was too afraid. But when you know, there were banners that said Holland, and I even have up there a sign that says Aerosmith with Holland. And then underneath it, it says like the week after Dio is playing. I've got a photo. But that was one of the highlights. And I think the other one was probably watching myself on MTV for the very first time. A record company had said, you're going to be on Headbangers Ball.
This is Nitro.
Yeah. And when we waited the entire evening, no Nitro, but you were like, this sucks, man. The last video of the night was Nitro. And with the four neck guitar and our singer breaking glass, our album in one MTV play went from obscurity to hitting the Billboard Top 200.
Freight you know? Train was the song, right? Freight Train? Yeah.
I just got a letter in the other day about a company licensing Freight Train. That song just keeps living on. And so I'm not sure what they want, but I'm going to contact them. It's, you know, totally above board and a serious, you know, it's an offer. They want a W-9, all this stuff. And so I haven't looked over everything yet.
That's cool. Good luck with that. So check this out. This is a Washburn one-of-a-kind PS2000B was the normal model. And this
Paul Stanley.
Yeah, Paul Stanley model, and it's a silver blue metallic. It's not like a glitter flake, but it's a little bit sparkly, and it's got a silver back neck. I think it's a set neck. I don't think it's a neck through, but it's really nice and just a great instrument.
Well, you know, when I was with Washburn, they, at that time in the 90s, that is a gorgeous guitar. That's definitely worth some money. It's great. Because at the time, they had Nuno Bettencourt, Dimebag, me, Dolly Parton, Paul Stanley. They were like cornering the market. Because at one point, I was talking to Austin, the guy I'm working with now, that Washburn was almost, they were either number two or the number one biggest acoustic guitar seller of acoustic guitars on the planet. That was, but they had all these great artists. And then the owner a few years later, it's just, he just, you know, he was older at the time. He just kind of lost interest, but it was so cool. I remember when Paul Stanley signed with Washburn, we were like, man, that's amazing. You have an amazing guitar. That's great. Congrats.
Love it.
Yeah. So it's awesome.
Michael, I had so much fun talking gear with you.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Too, but I'm such a gear nut. I let Mark talk about the music, and I was the gear guy tonight. But I still love the music just as much. But
yeah, and the new music, Michael, again, I'm really, really enjoying it. The album, again, More Machine Than Man, out on Rat Pack Records. It's out now. It's been out, I think, 1 week today, June 19th. And yes, on the podcast version of this, we will play some music off it. I think I want to play, after your interview here, on the podcast version, we'll do the Badlands, if you're all right with that.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's great, Mark. Thanks.
And again, we encourage everyone to check it out. It's up on Apple Music, Spotify. You can buy a hard copy of it on Amazon Music. And Michael, where is the best place for people to get in touch with you online?
Well, my website is handswithoutshadows.com. That's my Chinese name, Hands Without Shadows. But also just Michelangelo Badio on Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter. You know, I'm pretty easy to find on those social media sites.
Absolutely. And you know, it's a weird time right now, but we hope that it passes soon and we need you back out on the road. I'd love to see you play in New Jersey. I know you played some shows out in Queens, but we'd love to get you down here to New Jersey soon.
Yeah, I would love it too. You know, I'm going on tour again at the end of July. It starts in Milwaukee, but the number of shows is not, like, we did 21 shows in a row. And okay, it was the South because it was wintertime. It was in January and February. I was on the road all through January and February, literally from the 9th of January till almost the beginning of March, I was on tour. But it's this next tour, some of the shows are confirmed, but it's maybe 9 shows in August, not a normal tour like 2025. So, and hopefully my routing is going to take me east because it's warmer out. But I hope we can go to New Jersey, but we're not sure. You know, my agent, we're going to talk to see what we actually have. But what I have given myself the, like, internal nod, whatever is booked, I'm doing it, you know, just get out there and tell people live music is here. It's still here.
Yes.
So you, not about, you know, it's not going to be a big money maker. You can't, if you're going to play 10 shows in a month, but the shows that are booked, they're confirmed, and I will be there.
Well, we will be at any show we can get to in the area.
Cool. Thanks, John.
Well, if we have to, but as long as it happens and we can get there, we'll be there.
Cool. Awesome.
And as always, it's
that Washburn blew my mind. The Washburn guitar. Because, you know, we were just talking earlier today about Paul Stanley being with Washburn. And you have, because correct me if I'm wrong, but his guitars were more black and had that kind of mirror, you know,
yeah,
that's like a real collector's item.
And then they did some one-off finishes. And this is a one of one that was made out of a custom shop with this finish.
Bad. That's great. Yeah.
Here's a little
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, go ahead. No.
Well, my last thing about Washburn, one thing that a lot of people don't know about Washburn, there was a guy there during the time with your guitar and when I was there named Yuri Shishkov. Yuri came from the Soviet Union. He made his own tools. He was one of the greatest luthiers that's ever been on this planet. His inlay I love Paul Reed Smith. it could smoke the Dragon, Paul Reed Smith guitar.
Wow.
He was now a master builder at Fender. And then they created, he's beyond a master builder now. This is how good he is. He probably was one of the guys that worked on your guitar.
Wow.
You know, and so, you know, they had a real magical person there. He was one of the greatest luthiers that really has been existed on the planet. And he was with Washburn during that time.
That's unbelievable to think that this guy might have worked on this guitar.
Because he worked on all my USA stuff, that 820 that you saw, that was all him. And the P3 was cutting into my rib cage. So he actually beveled out the back and repainted it. You can't even tell. I mean, but I'm pretty sure that he probably worked on that one. You know, I can't say for certain, but that's a bad guitar.
Up and research him. I'm totally into that stuff.
Yeah. Yuri Shishkov. Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow.
All right. Cool.
Thanks so much for everything.
Were you going to say something, Michael?
Oh, I said thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet.
So
thank you, Michael, for all the great music throughout the years. I mean, you've been really literally like a soundtrack to my life. So thank you for everything you've done for us. I had a great time. It was almost 5 years ago, if you can believe that we hung out at VH1 and did that cool little video that was on demand on cable TV networks and on VH1.com called That Metal Gear. Maybe I'll post that again in the show notes for this episode on talkingmetal.com.
No, it's hard to believe it's gone by so fast.
Yeah, it really has. Somebody told me the other day that was 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I still have the laminates. I still have the original shirt. It was a great time for me. And, you know, us hanging out and, you know, I mean, we have a lot in common musically. So, you know, it's great to talk about it. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And anytime you need anything, please reach out to John and I. We are here for you. And stay safe and good luck with everything, Michael.
Thanks. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, John. See you later.
Michael, thanks for coming.
Bye.
Take it easy. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Michelangelo Badio, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, his album is More Machine Than Man, out on Rat Pack Records. Always love that guy. He's a fun interview, isn't he, John? He's fun to talk to.
Good guy, I like him. We gotta, next time I'm hanging out too, we gotta start going to shows again, if there are shows, you know?
Yeah. All right, dude, let's kill it for tonight.
Okay.
You want to play one song to take us out? Did we play it? I think we played
Michelangelo Badio.
Yeah. What do you want to play?
So I'm trying to think. Should we play something that has something to do with our show? Why don't we play, I got it. I think it's available. Why don't we play Freight Train? Can we play that?
Yeah, Freight Train by Nitro. Guys, thanks for joining us on Talking Metal. I got to go pee.
Okay, thanks everybody. Have a great day. I didn't wear my glasses today. I forgot. They're over there. But
all right, man.
This is like astronomy unmasked.
I'm going to leave the meeting.
Okay, bye everybody. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you, John. We'll see. I got to go pee.
Keep rocking.
Gotta let go, gotta set me free. Hey, hey, hey. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.